Okay, so I think we're good to go. Welcome to the very last session of TechEd 2013 in Europe. I hope you've all had a good conference. Has anyone had a good conference? Gosh, very quiet. You sure? It's been a good conference? Yeah, there you go. Brilliant. Okay, so for the final session, we're going to be talking about Exchange Online Protection. My name's Nathan Winters. I'm an Exchange Technical Specialist at Microsoft in the UK. So I work with some of the top 300 customers there to help them understand the architectural design around Exchange and to understand business value. And the other thing I've been doing a lot of recently is this. So Exchange Online Protection, and just talking to a few of you at the beginning of the session, has become one of those topics which is really getting a lot more interest from customers. You may know that we've had a product we called Forefront Online Protection for Exchange. That's been available for a number of years, and it came from an acquisition from FrontBridge in 2005. And it's been an online antivirus, anti-spam filtering solution with multiple layers of protection, multiple antivirus engines. But as you can see, we've transitioned it over the last 3-4 months to the new product called Exchange Online Protection, and it's very much tightly integrated into Office 365, although it's still absolutely available as a standalone product. So that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to walk you through some of the setup. We're going to do a really big demo of a lot of the administrative interface, all being well, as long as the internet stays available, and I'm sure, no doubt, you've had your challenges with that this week, as I have for sure. So let's crack on. Start off with a quote from Gartner. The basic concept being that these days the level of threats that we face is so significant and changes so frequently that the vast majority of organizations just simply don't have the time or effort available to really mitigate those threats effectively. In the past, we've very often been running on-premises antivirus solutions. And just simply managing and maintaining those, continually monitoring block lists, allow lists, trying to make them work, trying to ensure that they're updated, and then really monitoring all the reporting that goes on around those is frankly seriously time-consuming. And unless you've got the largest number of resources, it may well be something that people just don't have the time to do. And therefore, one of the things that we see more and more frequently is companies looking at an outsourced solution, essentially a hosted solution, to take that load away from them. And so this is really what the Gartner quote is saying. Yes, obviously people maintain an on-premises security system, but generally speaking, tying that up with a cloud filtering service can provide a whole bunch of benefits. And some of them we're going to go through shortly. So Exchange Online Protection is currently handling, give or take, 1 billion messages a day. That sounds like a huge number. But actually, you may be interested to know that we've had up to 5 billion messages come through the service per day. And it's one of those things that fluctuates over time. You may have seen in the press over the last few years now, actually, the last couple of years, that Microsoft has been working with law enforcement agencies around shutting down botnets. We've shut down one recently. I can't remember the name of it now. But fundamentally changing the flow of spam around the internet. And so, as I say, 2 or 3 years ago, we were looking at 3-4 billion messages a day. We've really cut that down. But that doesn't mean to say that the battle is over by any means. It just means that spammers are getting ever more clever, ever more devious in the ways that they try and attack organizations, particularly with specific targeted sort of phishing attacks on different organizations. So we've really had to beef up our game to target those specific attacks and work through the different ways that we can protect you from them. And that's where Exchange Online Protection comes in. So really, it is a comprehensive solution. We've got multiple antivirus engines, which means that if one of them's not spotting some sort of brand new virus, there's quite a potential that one of the others will. We've got an SLA based around 100% of known viruses detected. And we're constantly evolving the level of protection. We've got teams of spam analysts around the globe, and they work 24/7 just looking at spam, which as far as I can see, is a slightly strange job, if you ask me. That's not perhaps something that I fancy doing. But they're often multilingual, and they're looking at spam in all sorts of different languages and from different regions around the world, fundamentally to keep your organization safe. And that's, as I say, why it's very hard for an on-premises organization to really have that level of protection, because fundamentally the level of resources needed is astronomical. So that's the first part. I mean, Exchange Online Protection, and FOPI as it was previously, has actually been one of Microsoft's flagship enterprise services for a number of years, as I say, back from 2005 sort of days. And the level of resilience and redundancy is extremely high. It's a geographically distributed system, and you know, we can lose multiple data centers and still enable the mail to flow into your organizations because of that that distributed nature of the system. So we operate a 5 nines SLA, and that's financially backed, which means, of course, that if it goes down, you know, we will fundamentally refund you or give you the money back for that lost service. We've also got the ability to queue mail. So if, for example, your internet connection goes down, or for some reason your exchange organization, or for that matter, actually any on-premises mail solution, you know, this doesn't just protect Exchange. It can protect Lotus Notes. It can protect any other mail system that you can flow mail into via an MX record. But if that were to go down, then, of course, we can hold that mail and queue it for you until you're ready to get back up and running for up to a time period of about 5 days. The other side of things, obviously, is the need for phone support. You know, we've got 24/7 telephone support, which means that you're covered 365 days a year. And equally, if you've got a Premier support agreement with Microsoft, again, we can tie into that so that you've got that additional level of service. So really a comprehensive package which gives you comprehensive protection, but also the support to go with it. And the final piece here is around the administrative console, and something that we're going to show you quite a lot of. We've got a demo lined up, which I hope will be useful and really get you to grips with exactly how the thing works. It's been integrated into the new kind of streamlined, used to be called Metro interface, but the nice streamlined blue and white interface of Office 365 and Exchange 2013 Exchange Admin Center. Really gives you a nice experience and gives you a clean interface, which means that, frankly, the administrative training burden is not that high. It means you can get up and running nice and quickly. So how do we set this up? Well, we can connect to Exchange. Obviously, as I said, we can protect Exchange on-premises, and of course, we can protect Exchange online. And in fact, every single Exchange online mailbox is protected by Exchange online protection. So all the millions of mailboxes out there are already being protected by the EOP solution. In terms of setup, it's pretty straightforward. You know, we were talking to one or two people before the session started about getting up and running. And frankly, you can have this up and running in 15 minutes. It really is that straightforward. You know, what you have to do is you sign up for a tenant. That can be a trial tenant to get you up and going. And that literally is a question of choosing a name for that tenant, putting in some of your, email contact details, telephone number, and clicking go. And within, 5 minutes or so, you will have a tenant. In fact, probably a lot quicker than that. And then simply you have to add in the domains that you want to protect. So contoso.com or whatever your domain is that you want to protect. And you need to validate that you own that domain. So that really is as straightforward, again, as we do with Office 365, either adding a text record or adding a particular type of MX record, just a dummy one, that enables us to prove that you can manipulate the DNS for that domain and thus prove that you actually own it. So having done that, it's then a case of setting up mail flow between your cloud service here, in this case, Exchange Online Protection, and your on-premises solution. And again, that's really a question of send connectors and receive connectors. If you're used to Exchange, very straightforward. Smart host pointing out to the service, and inbound very much a similar method. So once you've done that, that's it. And you can really do that in 15 minutes. Now, obviously, there are a bunch of things that you may then want to do, and we can talk through those. So the next step really might be directory sync. So obviously getting mail flow up and running gives you a level of protection, gives you the antivirus and anti-spam capabilities that are in the box as part of the service. But directory sync will enable you then to take up attributes from your on-premises Active Directory and put them into the service. And by doing that, it means that you can then use those within the rules that you create. So bear in mind, I mean, Exchange Online Protection, you can sort of run it as a black box if you want, and just let it do its thing. But very likely, you're going to want to go and tweak that. You're going to want to set up the rules that mean that you can block this mail or have these particular keywords within your organization about a particular project and do some certain routing, for example, or block specific things. That's what Directory Sync enables you to do with the attributes from your Active Directory. So you might want to route mail to a specific group of users down a specific connector. That's the sort of thing you can do once you've synchronized those groups and users up into the service. And the nice thing about it is it actually uses the same synchronization engine, DirSync, as Office 365. So it is very much a simple download process. You download the tool, run through a wizard, which really is, again, very straightforward, takes your credentials for the service, credentials for your on-premises Active Directory, sets up an SSL tunnel, essentially, between the two locations, and then does a push synchronization. So it's taking the data from on-premises and pushing it up into the cloud service. And it will continue to synchronize that every 3 hours. So really straightforward. The other nice thing it does is enables you to synchronize Outlook safe and blocked sender lists. So if your users are used to managing their junk mail folder and the settings within Outlook, we can take those up into consideration when we're running the rules through the Exchange Online Protection service, which again means that the users have that ability really to tweak the service for their own particular requirements. So again, something which is quite nice there. So that sets the scene. That gets us just a basic understanding of what the service does. Let's take a look now at the anti-spam protection. How do we actually set you up and make sure that you're secure from the various different threats out there? We've got three main layers of protection. So the first one's connection filtering. Connection filtering really gives you the ability to block based on IP address, based on that simple, you know, TCP IP address, where's this mail coming from, and then we choose. And we've built up a very extensive, you know, block and allow list over the years. Obviously, running something like Hotmail and now Outlook.com has given us access to a huge amount of understanding about where mail comes in from. Equally, working with people like the FBI to understand botnets and so on, again, gives us that intelligence level around, you know, who is it that's sending spam. Interestingly, we mentioned up there 80% is basically cut off at that point. In other words, we don't even take the connection. We know that that email is absolutely spam and coming from a spamming source. It used to be closer to 95%. And again, that's one of those things that's changed over the last few years as we've eradicated some of those botnets. We can't be quite as sure where that mail is definitely coming from a spamming source because spammers have become cleverer. They've started to send fewer messages per IP address, for example, and that makes it harder to figure out exactly what's going on. So, as I say, a really big block and allow list, various information that we've gathered together, and also working with some partners in the space as well to get the best information from the various internet providers in that space. The second piece is sender. So sender ID, sender and recipient filtering. Again, similar concept, really just taking it down to the SMTP verb level so that you can obviously understand who's doing that hello message, where's it coming from, and who that sender and recipient is. And of course, we can understand this inbound and outbound. So again, you may choose to, you know, block certain things going out from the organization as well as blocking things inbound. And we can talk about how that works in a minute. So that cuts out 95% of spam. The last 5% then enters into the content filtering engine. And that, you know, from the services point of view, is the most costly because that's where we dive into the depths of the email. We're looking at MIME types. We're looking at the various different types of body, subject, headers, really diving into depth into the content to understand, you know, is this actually some sort of spam? It may have come through those two first major checks, but now we're into that content filtering piece. And again, this is where we've got a huge list of URLs, for example, different types of URL that particularly come together in a phishing attack. We've got a huge list of those, many, many, many thousands on that list. Again, various different heuristics to enable us to be constantly learning and constantly tweaking those rules. rules. And again, this is where those spam analysts come in. These are the guys that are going to be writing these rule engines, updating our list of regular expressions and so on, to really make sure that we can adapt actually within, you know, an hour, if not less, to a new threat emerging. So that's sort of the edge of the service, and these are some of the things that you can control. You can control in terms of connection filtering, IP address, allow and block list. So you can go in and set that up for your specific needs, maybe allowing mail all to come in from a particular partner, but obviously blocking that out from other places. You can actually opt in or opt out from the Microsoft maintained reputable sender list. So that's, again, one of those things that we've collated over time, and you've got a decision whether you want to take that or whether you want to start building up something on your own. So you do have that level of control, which, again, is very important in a cloud service. Then we have two different types of spam categories. We've got obvious spam, which is something we're pretty convinced is spam, and then high confidence spam, which is something that we're certain is spam. So these things, maybe they come through the first two layers, the connection filtering, and at the content filtering level, we think, yep, this is probably spam. At this point, we will then give you a choice. You can do a huge number of things with this, up to, I think, there's six different variations you can make with how you choose to route this spam. And because you've got two different categories, it's a little bit like the spam confidence level in Exchange. If you've been familiar with Exchange over the last few years, we've had that concept whereby you can set levels and have mail either blocked or sent into perhaps junk senders, junk mail folder. So very similar, and I'll show you that in the interface. You've got you've got various different options, including moving things to the junk email folder, which is the default. We've got quarantine, and we've got various other pieces as well. We've got a question over here. So the two in the middle there. No, so this is basically something which it's come through the connection filtering, so it's basically not come from someone we definitely know is a spam, otherwise that would have been dropped. This is something that would be coming into the system. The content filter is likely to pick it up as spam, but it's something that we think would give you the choice on, basically. So you have the choice at that point to decide. You could just delete it there. So you could say, yeah, especially for the high confidence spam, something that we're pretty much certain is spam, you could just say, actually, yeah, we trust the service, we're just going to delete that. You know, one of the things that you may do, for example, is run it for 2 or 3 months, get an understanding of just whether it's getting the levels right, and then tweak the filtering, for example, and say, yeah, we're sure that the service is getting that right. But to start off with, you may maybe change the header. So you may put something in the header, and then you can track that as it comes into your org and manage it that way. So you've got a bunch of options there, and I'll show you what that looks like in the admin interface in a minute. So, of course, there's a bunch of other things, advanced topics, and a couple just to call out, really. We've got some improvements around the ability to turn on and off the acceptance of bulk email messages. So this is a concept called bacon. We've all heard of spam, but bacon is kind of similar, a little bit better than spam, perhaps. Certainly pretty good for breakfast, anyway. But bacon in an email context, at least, is all those sorts of bulk mails, those newsletters, things that some people may want, but you know, other people may decide, no, actually, we really don't want this in our organization. So you've got some settings there, and we can now set this up for different groups of people in different ways so that you've got some choice around different parts of the organization having different settings there. So the other thing that's really significantly taken a step forward in the EOP release is international mail handling. You know, you can see here that we can block based on language, and that's something that we've had for a while. We had that in FOPI capability, but I think we've extended it with an additional level of languages. And again, it's where one of those things where the spam analysts, with multilingual spam analysts, come together to really help understand this. But again, the other thing that we've done is put together a bunch of things around region and really understanding where mail's coming from out of a different region. So, you know, frankly, if you're not doing business with a certain region of the world, you can actually decide, well, actually, I don't want to receive that kind of mail. I just don't need to. I don't have anyone that speaks that language, so we don't need to receive that kind of mail. And so again, there's a choice there that you've got control of. So what about junk mail management? It'd be interesting just to get an understanding from you guys out there what is going on in your organizations. So question for you all, how many people route junk mail in some form into the junk mail folder in Outlook? So you've got a couple of hands. Anyone else? So what's everyone else doing? Are you using a sort of hosted quarantine system? Yeah. So the majority there. That's interesting. Okay, interesting. And is that something that a user's generally happy with that? Is that a yes for generally happy? And a user's not happy with that? Okay, interesting. Now, the reason I say that's interesting is because you know, some of the interface research and some of the investigation we've done over the last sort of year or so whilst building this up has led us down the path of having the junk email folder in Outlook as the default location for spam coming through the service. So, and the reason we've sort of gone down that route is because, in general, people are quite used to Outlook and they're quite used to managing their mail in Outlook. And having that ability really just to have all their mail come into one place, and yes, obviously some of that may be spam, but the spam that we've, you know, sort of let through is something that's on that borderline generally, based on those criteria that you had earlier on to, you know, allow or disallow or maybe delete certain levels of spam. And have that coming into the junk mail folder means that really users have got one place to go. They go into Outlook, they see their mail, they can obviously see that through Outlook web app as well, and they can of course then manage the safe and blocked sender lists from that location. And that then gets synchronized up with the directory sync into the service. So it's interesting that there's quite a prevalence for the online type approach. We do, of course, have a quarantine system. So for those of you that are using that type of setup, that is something that we can also cover. So for example, if a mail comes in that you want to set up, and as I say, we've got these two different levels of spam, you know, pretty much certain it's spam, and then yeah, highly confident that it's spam, we can then do something like this. We can go into the quarantine area in the admin center, and as an administrator, we can then search through that release mail, potentially say, actually, this was a false positive. We want to send that up to Microsoft for you to analyze that and say, well, you know, you sure you got that one right? But the second option that we've got, so this is the administrative piece, and as I've said this before, yes, directory sync is used to sync up and down the blocked and safe senders. But this second piece is something called ESN. So is the acronym. Microsoft's famous for acronyms. And I've forgotten what this one means. ESN. Spam notification. Email spam notification. Not sure. Anyhow, the concept, of course, is that we get the user a notification. So after 3 days, we get a notification every 3 days. And of course, users may want that more frequently, in which case they can click an on-demand button. So once they've got that first notification, then they will always have the source to go in and click an on-demand, and that will give them then an up-to-date picture of what's in the quarantine for that particular user. And again, you can see that they can release the mail to the inbox, and they can report it as not junk. So in other words, that's a false positive. And through doing that, of course, we send that up to our spam teams, and they can then go ahead and actually look at that and say, well, you know, is that right? Is that wrong? What can we do there? So this is functionality which is coming out in a very frequent update. And it's going to, in an update in the next, I think, probably couple of weeks or so. So much more regular update cycle for Exchange Online Protection to perhaps what we had with Foppy. There's a question. Yeah, it's a good question. So the question was, is the junk mail actually viewable in the interface? It's not something I've seen myself. Based on looking at it there, it doesn't seem so. But I'm not 100% sure. So what we could do is, I'm happy to come and take your email at the end, and we can try that out for you as soon as it becomes available. There were one or two guys on the floor who may have had some better ideas there. But I say, I'm happy to take that one away for you. So in terms of spam, one of the things that we're really keen to do is make sure that we've got good control over both false positives and false negatives. And, you know, one of the ways we do that, obviously, is to integrate into Outlook. And again, this is one of those things that we've sort of talked about. We've got a couple of ways of doing things. We've got an add-in into Outlook to enable us to do junk mail reporting. And if we build this through, you can see just the basic interface here. You know, if you're working with mail, you can right-click a mail, and you can right-click that mail anywhere and specify it as junk, something that you want to report. That would be in the case where actually it's come through into your inbox, and perhaps you think it shouldn't have done. So in that sense, it's a false negative. You can report that through the tool. And what it will actually do then is just package that email up with the headers and so on and send that off to Microsoft for analysis. Of course, the other side of things that you can do is using the actual abuse email addresses. We've got a couple of email addresses there around false positives and then also abuse in general, and you can send off the reports there. So you've got a variety of ways to interact with the service if you're not using Outlook, for example, to ensure that we can really maintain the highest capability in terms of, you know, getting these things right, obviously making sure that you're getting the mail that you want and not getting mail that shouldn't be coming through. And this just builds through a couple of those interface points there, the concept of reporting as junk, and then how that interface looks from the end user perspective. So a question back there. So I think it was, are we blocking NDRs in general? Right. Okay, so basically you're saying it's blocking NDRs coming into your organization that are genuine. Okay. Right. Yeah, okay. One of the advanced settings talks around how we use things like sender reputation and SPF records. The simple answer is I'm not sure if that's how it's supposed to be working. I doubt it. So again, more than happy to look into that one and see what we can find out for you. Okay, so to wrap up this section, really we've got this outline of the architecture as a whole, and just give you an idea really of how mail flows through the system. You know, we've talked about the different levels of protection, and to start off with, what we're really showing in the top left-hand side is the MX record. You'll have an MX record based on your particular domain, because that enables us then to do things if we need to for your organization as EU-based routing, so keeping mail within the EU, or US-based routing if that's something that you need to do. So we can do that based on your MX record and where we then route that traffic. Once the mail comes into the service, we look at the IP-based edge blocking. And again, we've obviously got our lists there, but also the control that you can put in as part of your policies. Then we look at the envelope blocks, in other words, the SMTP verbs, and look at what's going on there. And if we're happy that we don't need to drop that connection, we will accept it into the service. At this point, we do the antivirus scanning, and that's done based on three, you know, reputable engines, updated many times a day, I think potentially at least every hour. And obviously, you know, we're getting updates directly from the vendors very frequently. Assuming we're not detecting any malware there, then we will pass this on into the next stage, which is the policy enforcement stage. And fundamentally, this is where you really get to interact with the service. This is where you get to come in and set up your custom rules and all the various different pieces that we can do. And that is something which we'll spend quite a bit of time with on the demo, just to show you exactly what's going on there and all the options that you've got. So again, you may choose at that point to quarantine mail based on your rules, but assuming you haven't, then we'll come through and finally we'll do that content filtering piece. As I say, that's one of the most expensive pieces in terms of service resources. So we do that at the end when we've got the minimum amount of mail that's come through the system. And we can check all the various pieces around bulk mail, international spam, some of the pieces we've talked about, but also then those things around SPF, sender policy framework, records, ID filtering, and so on. So we can really drill into the message and make sure that you've got the right stuff coming through. So assuming then that we've passed all the checks, we will then deliver to your corporate network. And as I say, we could hold that if you needed us to for a period of 5 days whilst you get some problem fixed that you may have had. Of course, then around that, we've got the ability to do this feedback loop, which again, as I say, spammers are becoming more and more inventive. You know, generally speaking, we catch a huge amount of spam. We've got an SLA based around 98% spam capture. Regularly, we exceed that. But obviously, on occasion, some things get through, and the ability to take feedback through the reporting tools into Outlook or those email addresses means that very quickly we can respond, and often within hours or even less, we can actually get a new rule into the service and catch that new exploit so that it's not threatening then your organization any further. So that's inbound. What about outbound? So how many people at the moment route their outbound mail through some sort of filtering service? Okay, yeah, so probably over half then, which is great because, you know, one example which happened quite recently actually is a customer of mine. They actually were on a filtering service. It wasn't actually our filtering service, but they were on our filtering service and some phishing mails got through. And what then happened was that some of their users signed up for something, which perhaps they shouldn't have done, with their domain credentials, which again, they probably shouldn't have done. And at that point, lots of mail was being sent out of their organization. And unfortunately, they weren't filtering outbound. So what happened then was they got blacklisted by a whole bunch of different lists. And of course, that takes a little bit of time to clean up. So it's not a great position to be in, which is why fundamentally, we recommend that if you can, we route the mail outbound through the service as well, because it gives you several layers of protection. Not only do we protect against viruses, obviously, outbound, you know, maybe someone's PC got compromised in some way, and we can protect that going out. But we can also enable you then to do rules on the outbound mail. You know, for example, data loss prevention. We can tie that together into the service. If you've got the enterprise service, or the premium product, essentially, we can tie things like data loss prevention in there and actually have really clever custom scanning of sensitive data types on the way out of your organization. Equally, we can then protect you against you sending out spam. And we've got reports for that and also notifications. So we can actually let you know, look, this machine's sending out spam. Are you aware of this? Was this deliberate or was this a complete accident? So, you know, you've got that level of protection which can make sure that your organization doesn't then get blacklisted. Equally, on the right-hand side, you can see that we've got different ways of sending mail out to the internet. We've got the outbound pool at the top, of which I think there are 10 different IP pools associated with it. So we really do have a multitude of ways of getting mail out to the internet just for basic good mail. The reason for that, of course, is we don't want the service to come under any kind of restriction in its ability to send mail. We then have two other pools. Bulk mail, that means if you're sending out, you know, bulk emails, maybe you're kind of going out to all your customers, for example, we can pick that up and actually make sure it's going out a particular pool, again, so that we make sure that we're protecting the service, but doing a good job to deliver your mail as well. And then finally, the high-risk pool, potentially for things like NDRs and potentially for other types of message which often get picked up as spam, something that we can use to then route that type of mail out. So through doing that, we both protect, obviously, your organization with the mail going out, but also the service as a whole to make sure that we can really, you know, continue to provide a good service for all the different users that we've got on it. So that was really a look at the spam service. What about the anti-malware? This is, quite frankly, a whole lot simpler in terms of configuration. We really do have the basics here in terms of notifications. We've got the ability to notify senders, notify administrators, you know, internally or externally, and to use some custom text to do so. So really, you know, the basic options that you need, the key thing really is that the vast majority of cases, people just don't want the malware to come into their organization. So we really just block that. We delete that attachment that may be containing the malware. We simply don't have a way of releasing that. So that is something which the service does automatically. But as I say, we can do the notifications around senders and recipients as needed. We can also then send that out to administrators, so we really can have an element of monitoring there. And of course, we could monitor that mailbox in an automated way if we were to need to. So as I said, pretty straightforward, that piece. Really, it's the key thing is that we're blocking 100% of known viruses. We've got three engines which are updated, you know, many times a day, potentially many times, well, at least once an hour. Which means we're constantly getting the most up-to-date engines from the vendors of those engines. Okay, so what about policy? Policy is really that area where you get to dive in and actually set this thing up for you. So I talked about getting up and running in 15 minutes. That's great. You can get up and running, and the service will work out of the box. But if you want to come in and actually tweak it to your heart's content, then you can do. And this is where you can put some more time in and really set the thing up to work based on your particular criteria. We've got a much more streamlined admin interface than we've had before. And again, I'm going to show you this in some depth in a live demo. But the concept here really was cleanliness, trying to take away the distractions and trying to make sure that as far as the user or the administrator goes, things were organized in a logical manner. You can see that we've got all the different tabs down the left-hand side and tabs across the top, really making sure that you've got one or two clicks to get to the vast majority of operations. So policies in Exchange Online Protection are fundamentally the same as transport rules in Exchange 2013. So for anyone out there who's an Exchange administrator, this is going to be very familiar. You know, FOPI, the previous release of the filtering service, had a slightly different rule engine. We had policy rules there, and they could actually do certain things that transport rules couldn't do. But with the 2013 release, we've brought together the best of both worlds. So we've brought in things from the Exchange Transport Rule area, like exceptions. But we've also then brought things in from FOPI, like time restrictions and setting up rules for a particular period of time. So bringing those together gives you something like you see here. You know, we've got the ability to create rules. We've got the ability to come in and select a vast number of different actions and categories. So for example, here we've got the sender is, and then person, external, internal to the organization, a member of a group, specific properties. And at that point, we can start using things like regular expressions and really diving in. So where it says address matches any of these text patterns. Again, you can really get in depth here so that you can actually be pretty specific around what you want to let in and out of your organization. The other things that we can do are in terms of, you know, blocking, redirecting. So for example, we talked about directory synchronization. We can push up into the service attributes from your Active Directory. And through doing so, we can then use those. So how about picking up the manager of that user and redirecting that mail to the manager if, for some reason, it was breaking some policy that you had set up internally? So a lot of flexibility to really choose within the service exactly what you want to do. You know, maybe you've got a group of users that shouldn't be receiving certain mail around, I don't know, some sort of topic. You can absolutely run those sorts of protections. We can then go in and do things that you might be familiar with around disclaimers. So again, you can make sure that we've got the right organization-based disclaimers. Obviously, most companies, I think in the EU, but certainly in the UK, have a requirement to disclose certain things about their company registration and their a place of business at the bottom of their business communications. That's something that you could absolutely do using this sort of method. So a lot of things that you can do and really drill into. We'll have a look at some of those in the demo. Final piece here then, around security. You know, wouldn't it be nice if a mail contained the keyword top secret or was classified secret, or maybe just had a code name for a merger that was coming up or an acquisition? Well, wouldn't it be good if we could secure that message? And we can. You know, we can secure that message in a wide number of ways. We can use rights management to protect it, to encrypt it, to prevent end users doing things like forwarding, copying, and printing, and so on. But equally, we could secure the transport with a particular connector using TLS so that we can really secure that stack. So again, a wide variety of options. Now, one of the things which is particularly nice is the ability to test out your policies. You know, often policies can be pretty straightforward. Let's block all mail with the word fish in it, for example. Well, that's great. But what about if you've got a regular expression that captures all sorts of different types of information? Maybe you're trying to block some sort of credit card, or maybe you're trying to block some sort of internal ID number. What happens if you get that wrong and you end up blocking, I don't know, all emails with the word and or the in it, which could happen? And that would be bad. That could be a career-limiting event. So in that case, we've got the ability to test those rules, and we've got those ability to test so that actually what you're doing is stamping something in the header, and you can then see those rules come through, which ones would have triggered, which ones wouldn't have triggered, and make sure that you don't lose your job over doing something a bit silly. So that's a benefit for administrators out there. Another thing which is quite nice is this ability to do time-based rules. So let's say that you've got a newsletter coming in, or maybe you do a company survey once a year with an external company that does surveys. They're going to send that mail in over the period 1st of July to the 7th of July. You want to let that in for certain. So we set up a rule to allow that. That rule then after the 7th of July will time out and just stop working, so you're not going to get bombarded with surveys about all sorts of other things. So it's another thing, a time saver for an administrator, the ability to really keep things simple, but to do your job in one step. You know, you can set this thing up, great, it does its job, and then you forget about it and it will turn itself off. Right, so that brings us to the demonstration. Fingers crossed that enough people have gone home, that the internet's working fine, and that we can switch over. There we go. So straight away, we're into the interface. This is the Exchange Admin Center as part of Exchange Online. But as I've said, Exchange Online Protection is absolutely a part of the Office 365 service. You've got a couple of ways that you can consume it. We've got a standalone version, which has a few less items on the left-hand side. But generally speaking, you've got exactly the same capabilities. This is just giving you some other options like public folders, for example, which is obviously an Exchange feature. But what we're going to focus on particularly is the Protection tab and the Mail Flow tab, which will give you an understanding of what Exchange Online Protection does. So let's drill into this. We've talked about a bunch of things, but just to highlight where they are in the interface. So the connection filter is the starting point. This, if we double click, is pretty straightforward. IP allow lists and IP block lists. So really, you know, it's straightforward, but you can come in here. You can set up either an individual IP address that you want to allow in, or a range that you want to allow or block, and it gives you a level of flexibility there. One of the nice things about the interface that you'll probably be able to see is that we get these sort of tips popping up, really giving you, again, sort of inline help fundamentally, something which is actually quite useful. If you're getting up to speed with the system, you can say, well, you know, what's this bit doing? And it will quite often show you and give you a small description. So that's allow and block lists at the IP level. We've also got this ability to enable the safe list. And again, you can see on the right-hand side there the nice tip that pops up. This is really enabling you to opt in to use the Microsoft aggregated safe list that we've obviously started working on over the last, you know, X number of years, fairly significant period, and are building into our intelligence from running a variety of different online services. Okay, so that's the connection filter. Next stage, obviously, would be that malware filter. And you can see here, again, that we've got the ability now to do multiple policies. This is something, again, which was fairly new. When we first released Exchange Online Protection, we had a single default policy. What we've got now is the ability to set up policies for all sorts of different groups and domains. So you can see to start off with, if we go in and create a new policy, we can give this a test, a name of TechEd maybe, demo TechEd, great. So we've got some criteria there. Now, what are we going to do? Malware detection response. Well, when malware is detected in any attachment, and then what are we going to do? Well, actually, I think what we'll do is delete all attachments and use custom test text. This is gone. So, you know, you can type in whatever you want there and obviously customize that for your particular users. And, of course, the nice thing about this is if you've got groups synchronized up, if we come right down to the bottom here, we could say the recipient is, and let's see if we've got a group here called EOP. Yep, EOP test group. So for any people in that EOP test group, this policy is going to fire. And you could, for example, use that for some language naturalization as well. So let's say that you had a bunch of users that were looking for French notifications. Then you could set up a policy here with a particular custom text then in that language. Now, as it happens, the defaults actually will be translated for you. But if you wanted to do this specifically yourselves and obviously write that message in yourself, then you could quite easily do that. And it's just getting you started thinking about the concepts of how you set these rules up. You know, it may not be kind of the most... Sometimes, you know, you have to come and think about how you're going to do this, and that's the sort of way, looking at perhaps a group of users that you can apply a specific policy to. And we'll look at that in terms of rules as well, so how you can do things, for example, like edge blocking, the ability for us to say, look, we only want to accept mail for the users that we have. We don't want to accept mail for anyone else. Well, you could do that again in a similar way. You could put all the users that you've got in a group, and then you say, if the user is not a member of this group, then delete that message. So again, it's a way of thinking through logically how you apply these things. So cancelling out of that, the rest of this is really just different ways of putting in customized text. And we saw this in the screenshots around notifying both the administrators or internal and external senders about the particular attachment that's been filtered. So that's the first two layers. Third layer then was that content filter layer. And if we go in here and look at the default policy, although having said that, you do have the ability to go in and create new ones yourself and do that same level of, if we can scroll down, same level of concept around who's it going to. And another example would be domains. You can see I've got three domains here. And you know we've got, well, these ones are exfutures.com, which is my domain we use for our lab. But you can add in, obviously, any number of domains to the service. And we could specify policy based on domain as well. So not just group, but domain and a variety of other things. But what you can see here is the content filter policy. This is where we pick up things like language. And you can see that we've got a wide range. Can't remember exactly. There we go. 86 total languages that we can pick up in different mail and specify within a policy. So we can then identify that. Equally, different regions. And we could turn that one on. But I think what's really interesting in this section is the advanced options. You know, the ability to go in and say, you know, are we going to bump up the spam score? So not saying that we're going to dump this mail specifically, but we're going to say it's much more likely to be spam if we've got image links to remote sites. We've got numeric IP addresses in the URL. We've got a URL which is redirecting to another port. So all these things are ways that spammers have to come and do phishing attacks. And you've got the level of control there to protect different groups of users, maybe different domains, and even different specific senders or recipients through the policy that you've got here. And this is also where we apply the BACON filter. So block all bulk email messages. And then things like NDRs. So NDR backscatter, the ability to target specific HTML objects within a mail as well. So quite a significant level of control. And again, area that we're going to invest and continue to understand new ways of ensuring that you can target spam as you need to. So they're the key areas. Outbound spam, this is where we set up the notifications. So if we've got a person that you particularly want to notify, generally maybe an admin or an admin distribution group, then we can set that up. And if anyone's found to be sending spam out through the service, then we'll pick that up and notify you so that you can actually make sure that you know, you're going to capture that and figure out what's going on before you get blocked in some way. And then the quarantine area. This is the administrative quarantine area. You'd be surprised at how difficult it is actually to get mail to go into the quarantine if you're just trying to do a demo. It's surprising. You can put all sorts of combinations of words and all sorts. But if it's not coming from a real spamming type address, it's pretty hard to get it to go in here. So there is actually a little trick on this. And I'll share that with you when we flip over to the other machine in a minute, because it's worth knowing about. But what you can see here is we've got a mail which has come into quarantine. And actually, you can then go and dive in here, double click, and either release it or release the message and also report it as a false positive at the same time. And you're getting things like the message ID then to be able to track that further as it flows into the organization. So, of course, if this had thousands of messages in it, the ability to search would be important. And you've got the ability to come in and do that here. You can see that we've got a variety of different criteria, but we can also come in and use things like wildcards and so on to give you a little bit more control. So you can pick up a large amount of mail here and then get down into the granular detail that you might need. So they're the key areas in terms of the general overall control. The other side of things is, of course, the rule engine. Because really, this is the sort of stuff that you can configure and then, generally speaking, maybe leave it and just let it run. But what you may want to be doing on a much more regular basis is figuring out what's going on in terms of rules. Because, you know, this is what gives you that really fine level of control. So let's start a new rule and figure out what we want to do. In fact, just before we do that, if I just show you the drop down there in a little bit more detail, you can see that we've got create a new rule. Well, that's scratch out of the box. But we've also got a few sort of templated rules as well to just help you along there. So apply disclaimers. Bypass spam filtering. Filter messages by size. So it's pre-canned rules, templated to help get you up to speed. But let's look at create a new rule from scratch. So again, let's call it tech ed rule. And let's look at what we're going to do. So we click more options to give you the full level of functionality. And let's just make this come up here a bit. And if we zoom in fractionally, then we can hopefully all see this as well. Yeah, that's looking reasonable. Okay, so apply this rule if. What are we going to select then? So we've got the sender is something. As you can see, a huge level there. And maybe an IP address, maybe the domain. Maybe the address includes some of these words. Or the recipient. And again, a very similar level of specification there. The subject or body includes text patterns. So we can come in here and we could set up, for example, a regular expression. And in fact, if I come out of that rule and just switch back here, you can see when I set up a little bit earlier, and there is the regular expression there. And that the aim with this one was just to pick up a credit card, basically 16 digits, four a space, four a space, four a space, and so on. Pretty crude way of doing it, because there are perhaps other better ways, but it was just an example really to show you how that might work. So let's come back to our new rule again. What about if we wanted some exceptions? You know, we can do a whole bunch of things in terms of matches, and we can add conditions and add conditions and add conditions. So, you know, you've got a variety of things that you can do. We can then select actions, and this is what we can then do with the message. We can send it for approval. You know, some moderation, essentially. We can redirect the message to quarantine or certain outbound connectors. I've got a question at the back there. Okay, so the question was around whether you can be doing ors or ands. So more logic there. Yeah, pretty sure we just do ands here. I think that obviously in the combination with some of the exceptions, you can get some of the same sort of functionality as an or. I'm trying to think, because I think that's one of those things which I think I've seen or in there, but I'm trying to think in what context. Yeah, it's a great question. I'll look into it. I believe it generally that we're doing ands here, but it's a good question, and I'll come back to you. So in terms of actions, again, a few of the other possibilities. Secure the message with rights protection or a TLS encryption. Another piece that we'll have in here very shortly is in Exchange-hosted encryption, the ability to use the Exchange-hosted encryption service, which is a method for emailing out to end users and giving them a kind of web-based interface into an encrypted message. So it doesn't require them to manage keys or any sort of certificates. They can simply just log on through a browser, authenticate based on their email address, and again, get that additional option. So it's something that's not enabled in this test tenant, but it's something which we've got, and obviously if you have that licensed, you can get access to it. So, bunch of rules, a bunch of ability to really control what's going on, and then obviously exceptions, the ability to audit. And the audit is fundamentally one of those things which, again, can give you then a level of workflow. Because if, based on certain rules firing, you set up an audit level, one of the things we can then do is send that audit to a particular mailbox which you monitor. And you could have maybe an Exchange Web Services application which just monitors that. All the audit alerts are in exactly the same format, so it's a standard format, and we could then trigger various workflow from that. Maybe you've got different level of administrators that might want to see different alerts and so on. Lots of automation could be done there. Out of the box, though, we can absolutely send those audit alerts for different levels and give you a really clear picture of what's going on in the service. Then we've got the testing capability and the ability to activate based on time periods. And then, of course, things like stop processing more rules. So in other words, if we hit this rule, that's it. We just decided we're going to stop there. It's definitely dead. We're going to drop the message or other criteria that you might choose. But we've got that ability to just kick things off. So that's a look at the rule engine. A couple of other pieces that are worth just understanding. Connectors. Connectors, as we talked about a little bit when we first started the session, around getting mail in and out of your organization. This is really how you can be specific about maybe setting up a TLS connector for a particular partner. So you can see that we've got an outbound connector here. And let's have a look what we've got set up. We might be able to set up a new one, but let's look at Fabricam. It's a partner organization. It's enabled an outbound connector. Security is opportunistic TLS. But what about a self-signed certificate or a trusted certification authority? recipient certificate matches domain. So we've really got the ability to come in here and be quite specific around how you want to secure that connection, whether you want to use your own certificates or a trusted one, and what specific domain it is that you want to protect. So we can do that. Then we can set up whether we're using MX record to route that or a particular smart host, and then the scope. So criteria-based routing, again, is something that's new to Exchange 2013, something which basically enables you to say, if this mail matches this particular set of criteria, why don't we route it out of this connector? And it enables you really to be very specific then about how mail flows around your organization. So I've done some work with maybe some government departments. They've got different classifications of mail. And they may want to route some sort of secret or secure mail out of a particular connector, which is then secured to a specific location. That's something absolutely that you can do based on the rule engine, picking up the classification, and then the criteria-based routing. So again, we can cover that both with outbound and, of course, inbound connectors, again, giving you very similar sorts of level of control around where the mail's coming from, what you might want to do to protect it around IP addresses, and which domains that you want to accept to flow over that connector into the Exchange Online Protection Service. So this would be mail that you've sent from your organization, and an outbound, it hits the service. That's an inbound connector because we're coming into the service, and then, of course, we'd send out to the internet from there. So again, level of flexibility there, which I think is quite useful. And then, of course, the final piece around tracing. So, of course, we may well need to come in here and say, well, what's happened to a message? You know, maybe something's not come through as we would have expected. And the ability to come in and look up messages that have come in is obviously very valuable. And I'm going to do, I did send some test messages to make sure that we had something here. So you can see I've just done a last 7 days. But, of course, you can come in again with wildcards or message IDs that you might have picked up from another report or, of course, sender and recipient. And you can see what's happened. And all these messages, of course, have been delivered. But you may have different status messages, obviously, if different situations have occurred. The nice thing is that you can see what's gone on. I mean, you can come in and see exactly what's been happened. And, of course, if it's been picked up by different rules, you'll be able to see this in this log report here. Yeah, question. Time limit on the trace log is, I believe, 7 days. So we'll keep that tracing reports for 7 days. I think that we will, well, one of the things I'm going to show you next actually is another reporting engine which allows you to keep it for up to 60 days, which is based on an Excel workbook that you can take data down into and then save that. So actually you could maintain that for a little longer. But within the service itself, what we've found is that people are doing this relatively quickly. And so we're maintaining that for 7 days. Okay. So really, that's the final piece of the administrative interface. What we'll do now is just flip over and show a couple of the reports that are worth a look. So if I come back now into the other machine that we've got here, and let me just bring this up. In fact, before that, I'm just going to show you a couple more of these in terms of the slides, just to build this up a little bit. So, of course, you know, one of the really important things with any service is understanding what's going on within it. And, you know, certainly important when it comes to spam and virus filtering. We've got a bunch of reports actually on the main interface, in the interface that we've just looked at, around just the basics, giving you an idea of traffic flows over time. You can see here received mail and the various different categories. You know, got good mail there in blue, spam in green, and so on, giving you an idea of peaks and troughs over time within the service. And you can see here we've got that basic data up to 60 days old to give you that sort of trending information. We can, of course, also give you information in more depth then around spam and where has this come from. So is it being blocked at SMTP verb level? Maybe you want to look at that. Where is that, some of that coming from? IP address list, or of course content filtering. And clearly the content filtering should be the smallest amount because it's something which is happening right at the end when we've got rid of a lot of the rest of that spam. Then, you know, again, there's a big peak there in malware detections. So maybe this is a time where, you know, want to look at that spike and say, okay, what's going on here? Are we being particularly targeted, or is there something new that's come out? And should we just double check what's going on with our on-premises machines? Just check that we're not somehow being attacked and something's coming through. And then finally, sense spam. Again, pretty big peak there. Something we really want to check out. What's going on? We may be sending spam. So that's where that notification would kick in and let you know exactly what's going on. So the final piece here around reporting is just around this concept of mail protection reports. And this is where we get into a lot more depth. We've got an API, which is open for those that are on the premium service or Exchange Online, so Office 365. For those that are using standalone, it's something you can pull from, but not something you can then write additional code towards. But you know, one of the things you can do with the premium service is actually write your own reporting engine and really drill into that and then draw down information as required. But out of the box, you get this this service. You can see here we've got an Excel workbook, or at least you could if we did this. Let's just do that and bring this up there and put it on here. There we go. That's what we want. So out of the box, we've got this. And this is an Excel workbook, which you would click query to do. And by doing so, it prompts you then for what you want to do. And we'll go ahead and pull that down. And this is basically going to go and hit that URL at the top, or the service URI, and bring down all the reporting data from the from the Exchange Online Protection Service. And so it's bringing down the latest information into the workbook, which, of course, you can then store. So you can then keep this for trending information over a long period of time, you know, once you've got that data down. And you could, of course, then drill into it in the sort of way that you would expect with an Excel spreadsheet. So let's have a look at this once it's just pulled all this down and updated all its particular reports. Takes a moment, and there we go. So 46 records fetched in 22 seconds. So we'll start off just by looking at traffic. And you can see that I've had not a massive amount going on there. We've got sent mail 3 over the last week or so, or 3 a day. So pretty pathetic numbers there, but the concept is there at least. And you know, if you're used to Excel, you'll be used to these picker lists and slices and so on to give you the ability to drill in. And you can also see the time frames and so on. So if you've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of mails flowing through this, you can very quickly get an idea around peaks and troughs and doing some analysis there of what's going on. If we then come across and look at the rules engine, again, you can see what's been going on. So we can see the rules here that have triggered Canada financial data. So that's one that was built around data loss prevention and picking up specific financial data like credit cards, for example. And this is something which we can then see. And we can again drill down at the bottom here into exactly what's going on in terms of time frame and the messages that are sent. And then if we want even more about spam, we could again see the spam messages that have come in and drill in there. Question at the back there. Yeah, so if you're running the premium service or Exchange Online, so if you've got the Exchange Online Protection Premium, in other words, you've got the Enterprise CAL type functionality, or if you've got Exchange Online, the full Office 365 service, then absolutely, yes, you've got the DLP piece built in. Sorry? Exactly, yeah. So we can pick up sensitive data types, essentially. Yep. 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 Yeah, so the question for everyone is basically, could you use this to give a 2010 customer the concept of DLP for PCI, so payment card industry protection and compliance? And yeah, absolutely. So basically, you've got to bear in mind this is for mail routed outbound. So clearly, you know, for internal mail within that 2010, it wouldn't be triggering. But for mail routed out through the service, then yeah, absolutely. As long as you've got the Enterprise CAL and you're using that, then not a problem. Yeah. So all in all, I mean, as I say, there's not a huge amount of data in this, but or, you know, you've got a level of reporting here, which is something that we've not seen from a Microsoft service in terms of what FOPI had. This is an extreme improvement here, and something which, again, is just going to continue to get better and better. We're adding more and more reports almost on a monthly basis, constant updates to the service. There's a question at the front there. So is it possible to drill down for a delivery port for an outbound mail? I must admit, I'm not sure. I think it's one I'd have to look into. We can certainly come and have a chat at the end and we'll look into it, but not sure for certain. So. Right. Okay. So, on the home stretch now, really, I think that's the reporting concept. And if we just switch back over to here now, and we'll bring this back up. There we go. So, really, we've talked through some of the message tracing capabilities. We've looked at what that covers in the interface. You can see some of the specifics here. You know, by default, we're getting the top 1,000 of the last 48 hours of messages coming up. But, of course, we can search in there with wildcards and so on to drill down further. And then, really, important to understand some of the differences between FOPI and EOP. Generally speaking, it's a wide range of improvements. As I say, we've got full use of the regular expression engine in .NET. So whereas FOPI had a kind of basic engine, we can now drill in and use the full .NET regular expression engine. Again, policy rules, significant improvement in terms of rules around the tie-up between what we had in FOPI and then the exchange transport rule type capabilities. And then we've got, you know, intelligent routing, the ability to do that criteria-based routing and send things out of different connectors based on data type or the rules that you set. And again, the improvement in reporting. So really, overall, a significant improvement in terms of capability, reporting, admin interface, which I hope, you know, you'll agree is a nice interface to use. It's pretty clean and pretty straightforward. So, with that, how do you get it? You know, we've touched on this a little bit, but just to be really clear, there are a couple of ways. You can go and buy this straight off the website. That's the Exchange Online Protection standalone offering, and that gets you Exchange Online Protection. It doesn't get you the pieces, for example, like the DLP piece that we've talked about, the data loss prevention piece, and it doesn't get you the ability to write your own reporting engine and tie into that API. So you can use the Excel spreadsheet, but you can't go in and sort of add to it. So that gets you a good quality level of protection, gets you that whole rule engine and everything that you'll have seen there in the admin interface. But it's obviously not going to give you a couple of those extra bits, which if you have then the Enterprise CAL, when it comes for Enterprise CAL with Exchange, or the Enterprise CAL suite, or of course, if you buy Office 365, then you get the whole stack, and you get things like the data loss prevention piece as well. So, you know, there are a couple of ways to buy it, but the key thing is, it's available with Office 365 for all the mailboxes. And if you want to get started, just go and sign up for a trial. If you go and search for Exchange Online Protection 30-day trial, you'll be able to sign up, get a tenant up and running, and just have a play, really. You can go in and see all the rules and do all the sorts of stuff that I've done today and just, you know, see how that's working for you. In terms of migrating from FOPI, I know one or two of you are doing that at the moment. You know, basically speaking, we've got a relatively automated process. We've got the capability for one of our implementation project managers, so the IPM team, to work with you if you've got complex rules or rules that don't quite fit the automated model in terms of moving across. But in general, we're taking across all the rules that you've got. And over the next, I believe, 6 months or so, we'll get people entirely transitioned across to the Exchange Online Protection Service. Right. So with that, to summarize, we've got a multi-layer protection. We've got a geographically dispersed service with financially backed SLAs, 5 nines of uptime, 100% known virus protection, 98% spam detection. We've got the ability for you to come in and really enhance the configuration with your own policies. create significant rules and so on to enable you to really protect your organizations, and a much cleaner interface and a much more joined up interface. Again, if you're using Office 365, this is something which has exactly the same interface. It's also got the same interface as Exchange 2013. So really something that's going to become familiar and something which people will be used to working with. And with that, we're pretty much at the end of the conference. So some of these obviously will be less relevant than they would have been at the beginning of the week. But nevertheless, you know, the Exchange Team blog, a great source of information about Exchange and Exchange Online Protection. And then the IAMMEC, or the IAMMEC conference. We've got an Exchange conference again next year in April. I think that's in Austin, Texas. And that will be an interesting time to get, you know, more information about what's coming in the Exchange world. We've obviously got a bunch of resources. So these presentations have all been recorded, as have the ones from TechEd in the US a couple of weeks ago. So Channel 9 is the place to go for those, to watch some of these things again. And then, of course, again, we'll be very grateful for feedback on the session. Helps us to understand, you know, what sessions to put on next year. Gives us some personal feedback about how we're doing. And all in all, thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much for staying to right to the end of the conference and for listening and asking questions. So thanks very much. Thank you.